Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Acharei Mot Kedushim. Coming up soon is Shavuot, and you are invited to the Shavuot retreat in the United States, May 18th through 22nd. The retreat will be at Ramah Darom, and it'll feature Rabbi Meir Schweiger, Rabbi Yefa Epstein, Rabbi Sarah Mulhern, and Rabbi William Friedman, plus a variety of workshops, events, community building activities, and communal prayer options, with Ramah Darom counselors providing age-appropriate programming for kids and teens. A program highlight will be a lively all-night Tikkun Leil Shavuot study session. Check out all the details and join the faculty at the retreat. Information is available on the Pardes website. That's pardes.org.il. This week, Acharei Mot Kedushim with Rabbi Dr. Howard Marcos. Rabbi Howard Marcos is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Howard Marcos.
Thank you, Larry. This coming Shabbat has as its Torah reading a rather lengthy section of the book of Vayikra, the book of Leviticus. We will be reading both Parshat Acharei Mot, which is comprised of chapters 16, 17, and 18 of Vayikra, and Parshat Kedoshim, which covers chapters 19 and 20. This section of our Torah begins with a reference to the unfortunate demise of two of Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, who met their deaths, according to an earlier Torah text, because they offered a foreign sacrifice through a strange fire, an Esh Zara, for which they were punished by God with their untimely loss of life. The Kohanim, the priests, are then instructed in this Torah portion how to carry out the Yom Kippur rituals on behalf of the entire Israelite nation in order to achieve forgiveness from God for any sins that may have been committed by them. The text continues with a delineation of sexual intimacies that may not be undertaken by members of the community who are urged to strive for holiness on the way to establishing a special and unique relationship with the divine. And then we reach chapter 19 of Vayikra, my absolute favorite chapter in the entire Torah, which begins what is commonly called the Holiness Code, named for the opening verses of the parasha, in which God commands the children of Israel, Kedoshim tihiyu, ki kadosh ani Adonai Eloheichem. You shall be holy, for I, the Lord, your God, am holy. In this section of the Torah, we are presented with divine commandments of morality in the form of do's and don'ts, instruction as to how to live successfully within society as a whole, fulfilling mitzvot that are designed, it seems, to connect people to one another. In this sidra, we find one of what I consider the most difficult mitzvot of all to observe. It's harder, in my opinion, to carry out than the laws of kashrut, the positive and negative mitzvot of Shabbat, or even the laws of family purity, Taharat HaMishpacha. This mitzvah is found in verse 17 of chapter 19 of Vayikra, right smack in the middle of the chapter. We are taught, Lo tisna et achicha bilavavecha, hocheach tochiach et bnei amitecha, velo tisa alav chet. The new JPS translation offers the following. You shall not hate your kinsman in your heart. Reprove your neighbor, but incur no guilt because of him. I think that this verse is teaching us that if we see someone close to us, or even someone not so close, doing something that hurts us, or that we perceive to be wrong, we have to be open and strong, and be willing to confront them about it, letting them know how we feel. If we keep it all inside, it can be reasoned, we might very well come to resent them, and even come to hate them in our hearts, exactly the situation which the Torah instructs us to avoid. Lo tisna et achicha bilavavecha. You shall not hate your kinsman in your heart. If they continue to wrong us, continues this interpretation, we also become partially responsible for their behavior and become a kind of accessory to the crime, as it were. Hocheach tochiach et bnei amitecha are the words in the Torah used to describe the manner in which we must inform our neighbor of their errant ways. How might we translate this phrase, Hocheach tochiach et bnei amitecha? As I said, the new JPS translation is reprove your neighbor. And I found other translations that offer phrases such as, you shall surely rebuke your neighbor, or you must correct your neighbor. Whether it's reprove, rebuke, correct, they all imply that we must take action to steer our neighbor in a particular direction, away from where they seem to be at the moment. This is definitely not neutral language being used to describe the observance of this mitzvah. We are obliged to give criticism, to share negative feedback openly and honestly, making, as I said, this one of the most difficult mitzvot to carry out. What do you think? Do you think it's harder to do this mitzvah, to give negative feedback, or is it more difficult to receive it? It's not easy being critical of others because often we feel as though we might be hurting the other person, that they might resent our words and as a result resent us. Perhaps they will feel attacked and offended and get angry with us and attack us verbally in return as a defense mechanism. However, in a similar light, it might be difficult to receive criticism because, quite frankly, most of us believe that what we are doing and how we are acting is proper. And when someone informs us that we have done something wrong, it hurts. We might feel that what is being communicated to us is that not only was our action misguided, but in personalizing the comments coming from another person, we might conclude that the message is that we ourselves are misguided and that there is something wrong with us and not just our action. Rest assured that doling out and suffering criticism has been difficult for human beings for thousands of years, and it is not unusual to find references to those phenomena in our Jewish literature. Take, for example, comments attributed to Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, third and fourth generation Tanaim, who lived and taught in Israel around the turn of the first century of the Common Era. In the Babylonian Talmud tractate Arachin, page 16b, we are taught in a Braita, a rabbinic teaching that didn't make it into the Mishnah itself. We learn Tanya, Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Timihani Ani, Im yesh bedor hazeh shemekabel tochacha, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Timihani, im yesh bedor hazeh sheyodea lehochiach. Rabbi Tarfon exclaimed, I don't believe that there is anyone in this generation who knows how to accept criticism. To which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah replied, you know what I think is wrong with this generation? No one knows how to give criticism. So which is it? If we could handle receiving criticism and consider it simply a form of non-malicious guidance, it might make us more comfortable sharing the same with others. Or perhaps, in order to help us feel better about hearing negative feedback from our neighbors, we must make a concerted effort to give it to others first. So again, which is it? Giving criticism or taking criticism? That's harder to do. Personally, I believe that as difficult as it might be to accept, rebuke, reproach, or criticism, I believe that as difficult as it might be to accept, rebuke, reproach, or criticism is important information to receive, as important as, and sometimes even more important than positive feedback, as we consider the direction that we wish to take in our lives. To illustrate my point, I'd like to explore with you a very practical halakha found in Orach Chaim of the Shulchan Aruch, Yosef Karo's magnum opus, which he wrote in the 16th century in Spain. In the laws regarding reading of the Torah, section 142, we learn what to do if a person makes a mistake while reading from the Torah. On weekdays, on Shabbat, on holidays, it doesn't matter, whenever the Torah is read in public. The Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, explains, Kara v'ta'a afilu b'diktuk ot echat machzirin oto. If one is reading and he makes a mistake, even regarding pronunciation of one letter, you are obliged to send him back, that is, to correct him such that he will say the correct word and then continue reading. The Rama, on the other hand, who is the Ashkenazic contemporary of the Sephardic Yosef Karo, shares the following in his gloss. V'chein din ha-chazan ha-korei. V'davka shinui shemishtaneh al yedei ze ha-inyan. Aval im ta'an b'nginat ha-ta'am, o b'nikud, ein machzirin oto, aval go'arin bo. The Rama explains that even in our day, when there is often a professional reader of the Torah and not the person called up to recite the blessings, even then this rule of correcting applies, intimating that the key is to get the reading right no matter who is doing the laning. He goes on, however, this rule of correcting applies only when the misreading changes the meaning of the word or phrase. If the reader errs in the cantillation or in some pronunciation which does not change the meaning, then one is not obligated to make the reader go back and read a corrected version. The Rama concludes with a very interesting and important comment. Aval go'arin bo. However, one must rebuke him. Which means that even though we might not have corrected him on the spot, we must still let him know that he made a mistake. Well, this disagreement about what to do when a Torah reader makes a mistake is a very sensitive, but I think very important discussion in synagogues and communities throughout the world, even in our day. Do we correct every deviation of a Torah reading in order to get the proper message across? Or do we just make the corrections that will have an effect on the meaning of the text? I think that this entire section of halakha has to do with the difficulties that we have in being critical of others. Yosef Karo and his camp says, it's okay to be critical and to make corrections, because when it comes to reading the Torah, it is important to get it right, and it's not personal at all. The Rama, Moshe Isserles, says that this is true, but sometimes we need to lean towards being less critical, especially when the error that the reader made does not change the meaning of the text. Even in this case, says the Rama, a reprove is still in order. Well, digging even deeper into this particular ruling, I even found a modern commentator who said that even in a case in which the Torah reader's mistake changes the meaning, De'afilu b'makom sha'inyan mishtaneh, mi shenoheg lehakel shelo lehachzir ein limchot biyado. Even where the meaning might be changed as a result of the mistake made, if one chooses to be lenient and not make the reader correct the error, one is not to protest this approach. The Chafetz Chaim, who lived in Russia in the early 1900s, responded to that comment by saying the following. V'lo mistabra lehakel kol kach badavar, v'day lanu lehakel b'ma shehakel hagra. It doesn't make so much sense to be so lenient, but rather let's rely on the Vilna Gaon's distinction. He was not so comfortable about withholding the correction even when the meaning doesn't change, but said that if one says, for example, Mitzriim instead of Mitzrim, the Egyptians, or if one says Im and not Ve'im, if and not and if, Even when it might not change the meaning, a correction is in order. My friends, I believe that this whole conversation about how to correct a Torah reader comes to us in the shadow of our verse in Parshat Kedoshim. The Torah teaches us that we are commanded to offer mid-course corrections necessary to assist a person in completing their mission, in this case, the reading of the Torah. And believe it or not, we can all benefit from that same guidance when we have gone off course. It is as valuable to us as the positive information that we might receive to stay the course. Let's imagine for a moment that a spaceship is prepared to take off for its mission in space. Now imagine that this spaceship is human, with feelings, able to think and feel as a human being does. Here's the rocket, sitting on the launching pad, all systems go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, things are looking good. When all of a sudden the computer system forces a complete engine shutdown. "Houston, we have a problem," announces mission control. "There is a malfunction which, while perhaps minor, must be identified and repaired before the rocket can take off." "What did I do? You bring me this close, making me feel as though I'm in great shape to fulfill my mandate. And then you tell me that I have a flaw? I don't know why I have to feel responsible for this malfunction. This is really hard for me to take." But then, when the rocket finally gets off the ground and enters into orbit in space, all it ever does is respond to the computers at Mission Control, which say, "3 degrees to the left. Now 2 to the right. Stop turning. Start turning. Do this. Don't do that." The spaceship says, "Oi, maybe it's me. I can't seem to do anything right. I have to have someone constantly standing over me, telling me how to correct my faults and my errors. Maybe I'm just no good. Maybe I should just turn around and go home." The truth is that a rocket, not unlike human beings, needs plenty of corrective feedback that will allow mid-course corrections necessary for a successful completion of the mission. I dare say that so do we. And if receiving constructive data from this kind of feedback can be seen as helpful to us, might we be able to appreciate that giving criticism lovingly and sensitively can be extremely beneficial as well? Great scientists thrive on discovering their experimental failures because they know what not to do the next time. There's a story, a Midrash Agadah, perhaps, that teaches that Thomas Alva Edison tried 999 times to produce an electric light and failed each time. When interviewed by a reporter and asked, "Well, Mr. Edison, what do you think of your 999 failures? Edison replied, "Now I know 999 ways that don't work." And the tradition shares that in his 1,000th experiment, he did indeed produce the electric light. Hocheach tochiach. By virtue of the use of the double verb, the Torah is teaching us that we must try extra hard to offer constructive and yet corrective criticism. And if we do so without an edge to our words or our expression, in a manner in which we would be happy, well, maybe more comfortable receiving similar feedback ourselves, then we will be fulfilling one of the most difficult mitzvot of the Torah. We must be careful not to give this kind of criticism cavalierly, knowing deep inside that our words will be used to hurt someone or to destroy them, God forbid, ostensibly in the name of fulfilling a mitzvah. God and our conscience know what is truly in our hearts and what our real kavanah, our intent is when we share criticism with others. If our motivation for giving corrective feedback is to provide information that will assist others in changing course for the better, and our willingness to accept criticism is in the name of self-improvement, then the potential pain can quite quickly turn to growth and appreciation. If we return to our parasha in which this verse is found and read on only one more verse, we find that it ends with the following words, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, ani Adonai. Love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. May the manner in which we relate to our neighbors contain the love that we would wish for ourselves, and may the divine spirit with which we have all been blessed give us greater strength when we give as well as when we receive. I hope that you all had a wonderful Israel Independence Day, a belated but certainly sincere wish to all of you of Chag Ha'atzma'ut Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Marcos. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.